This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
But to make sure that they do not hurt patients and result in a bloodbath that we have seen in the case of HIV/AIDS.
I want to thank you both very much for being with us, Dr. Peter Mogenyi from Uganda and Dylan Mohan Gray, director of the new film that has just premiered here at the Sundance Film Festival, Fire in the Blood. And that does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke and Aaron Mate, by Renee Feltz, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Masood, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzdari, Mid Littlefield, Dennis Moynihan, Brenda Murad. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley. We continue at Sundance through the week. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with host Lisa Loving. Today, we're going to talk about foreclosures.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud media sponsor of Organicology, the Northwest's largest gathering of the organic food trade. Study the organic industry and shape the future of sustainable eating. February 7th through 9th at the Hilton, 921 Southwest 6th Avenue in Portland. Again, that's Organicology, February 7th through 9th. More information can be found at kboo.fm/organic2013.
KBOO Community Radio and the Clinton Street Theater presents a monthly film series on the second Thursday of each month. January 10th at 7 p.m., we present the 1988 film Talk Radio, in which a rude, contemptuous talk show host becomes overwhelmed by the hatred that surrounds his program just before it goes national.
Open your mouth and tell them what we're going to do about the mess this country's in. Talk Radio! It's the last neighborhood in town. People just don't talk to each other anymore. Let's go to the first caller, Night Talk.
Before the film, we'll hear Carl Wolfson, who will talk about his experience as a talk show host in Portland. And the film will be introduced by a KBOO board member and Wednesday Morning talk show host, Lisa Loving. That's January 10th at the Clinton Street Theater at 7 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm/kboofilms.
It is 8:04 a.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and today, is your home in foreclosure? Are you facing a catastrophic debt that's driving you out of your life? We're live with community organizer Carrie Coe, Glenn, and Monica, and we're going to be looking at the latest anti-foreclosure actions by Occupy Portland. And I just want to go straight to Carrie. Carrie, your finger's on the pulse. What's going on with the Austin family? What's going on with our movement here?
Yeah, so the Austin family, which is Debbie, Ron, and their two children, have been fighting foreclosure for over a year. They were actually the first family in Oregon to come out publicly and say, we're resisting eviction. That happened in December of 2011. And we are Oregon and the housing justice community have been working with them ever since to do everything that we can to make sure that they get to stay in their homes. Their story is a really, I think, common story that both Debbie and Ron were diagnosed with cancer cancer. Ron had to quit his second job. They requested a modification. They went through the process, but of course,
loan modification. Yeah. And this is through Fannie Mae?
Yeah, they currently are through Fannie Mae, and they're part of that national program where Fannie Mae is essentially evicting people from their homes with brute force. And the so the Austins have been fighting for a year, and last Wednesday, the police and the sheriff and private security guards came to their home and forcefully evicted them under the dark of night.
Yeah, this is so, it was like they waited until, and this is what has happened in other places too. Mm-hmm. The sheriff's office, I think it's the sheriff's office that technically sort yes. of runs those. They might bring in police officers or people from other jurisdictions, but it's specifically the sheriffs of your community. So they waited until the dad went to work at 5 a.m.
Yes.
Then they went in and evicted the mom. And how old are the kids?
The children are college age children.
Okay, so they went in and dragged the family out. Mm-hmm. And they were able to get their school supplies. Right.
Yeah, the daughter actually saw that the police were and the sheriff was coming in and, you know, grabbed her things that she knew she would need for school. And, you know, Debbie collected what she could, mainly her coat and her shoes and a change of clothes in the moment and whatever medications she was able to grab. And then, you know, they were forcefully removed from the home.
So this is a weird one. This is Kay Boo. We're talking about what's happening with the anti-foreclosure movement. What happens when someone comes and forecloses on your house? Are you not allowed to take your stuff? Is that stuff not yours anymore? I'm just curious. And callers, does anybody know the answer? Callers, have you been foreclosed on? Because I'd love to hear from you. What happened? Okay. 503-231-8187. But, I mean, I keep reading this about, you know, the sheriffs wait until the male of the house leaves. And in this more recent case on Alameda Ridge, right? Mm-hmm. And people were so unsympathetic to this family, but it did come down to a catastrophic illness and a bank that refused to have a loan modification. The bank refuses to talk to the people. So they went in and they just dragged the couple out. And, I mean, they're ill. But, I mean, can you not keep your stuff? What happens?
One of the pieces of this is that the people who are resisting eviction are, you know, living in their homes in the same way that they've been living in their homes all their life. And the intention is that they stay. And so when the sheriff comes in and forcefully evicts people, it's at the behest of a bank or a developer or somebody who wants that home to profit. And so those folks who are wanting that home are trying to get the people out as quickly as possible, and then they'll deal with the stuff later is sort of the mentality. So for the Austins, they had to get out immediately, and they installed an armed guard in the house, and then
Fannie Mae installed an armed guard at the house.
A private armed security guard, several private armed security guards over the course of, you know, since they've been evicted. And Debbie, you know, was able to call the lawyer who works for Fannie Mae locally, because Fannie Mae actually doesn't have a local office anywhere in the Northwest, but they did hire a lawyer. And so she was able to coordinate with the lawyer to get access to her stuff. It was very, you know, it was a very tense situation. They had very specific demands. You know, Heather and Will, the folks on Alameda Ridge, on the other hand, who were evicted by a developer who, you know, called the sheriff on them, and they were, you know, violently evicted from their home. They still, to this day, don't have all of their stuff that they were supposed to, you know, that was in their home. That had a lot of not only sentimental value, but had a lot of value for their son that died in their home not that long ago. Mm-hmm. So the what do you do about the stuff question is actually a big question, and it's totally dependent on the developer or the bank that they get to make that call. So you know, that's clearly unjust.
This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We are back revisiting this issue about the anti-home foreclosure, and I'm really interested in debt. People, if you're in debt, I mean, I really would like to hear from you. I can tell a few stories about my own household. We're going through some things right now with catastrophic illness. But anyway, we would love to hear from you, 503-231-8187. We have a couple callers, but I want to go around so that we know who we're in the room with. Glenn and Monica, your neighbors of the Austins. I want to start with Monica. Monica, how did you get involved in this? What have you seen happen at the Austin house?
Well, you could really, I had to trace it back to beginning with activism with Occupy Portland and just everyone that I've met through there. I met Glenn through there. I met Carrie through there. Throughout that journey, you see needs opening up, and the foreclosure defense was a huge, just a huge cry of injustice that you can't just sit by and watch people get kicked out of their homes. I mean, think about your home, think about your childhood home that you grew up in, and then being kicked out by someone holding a badge and a gun in your
house. To me, it's more than that. It's the banks are literally ripping people off. The banks, the financial sector, the people that buy and sell debt. Those are the ones that really get me. The debt servicers. Is that what they're? That sounds so kinked. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so Glenn, how about you? How did you get involved?
Well, specifically with Debbie's house. Debbie has lived in the neighborhood that I live in for about 4 years longer than I have. She moved in 26 years ago. My family moved in 22 years ago. It's an old neighborhood. There's a lot of community ties through there. I didn't actually meet her until they did the actual announcement a year ago saying that we will stay here. We have not missed a payment yet. I think that's one of the things that is just the most disgusting thing about this particular case is that when the Austins filed for their loan remodification, they made their three payments over the 90 days. And then the bank came back and essentially said, well, you didn't make your regular payments, so you're 3 months behind.
That's
you're
what
evicted.
I'm talking about. That's fraud. Like, to me, that's fraud. But go ahead.
It's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
I mean, and at that point, that's when I found out about the Austins and went over and met them. And there was a big press conference and everything. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to keep up on it. And I believe it was early November was when the sheriff finally said, okay, we're going to kick you guys out. And we started bringing people over there to just be there in case the police showed up to show support, say, you know what, we're with you. This is fraudulent action by the bank, and we will support you. You have a foot to stand on, and we're here to back you up.
Okay, Glenn and Monica, neighbors of the Austins. We have a full slate of callers, and let's go to the phone lines. We have Jeremy on the phone. Jeremy, what do you think?
This is a fraud issue for me since I'm someone who's been inspired by anarchism two-thirds of my 60 years, and I own a trust place, and, you know, I'm well below market. My tenants think I'm a much better landlord than I am. But the thing I'd like to ask, I think, Carrie Koch about is this woman, I believe her last name is Jackson. She bought a house worth about the 70 grand that she paid for it, I think. It was under 100. And she basically used it, as far as I can tell, like an ATM. I think you should find, I mean, the man who just spoke, I have, you know, that's so grotesque I can't think about it. I don't believe in private property. I don't think Jackson should have lost her house. But I don't think that, you know, I'd say it was, you know, something like about a third of the people who went into foreclosure did something like bought second houses, bought 7 flat-screen TVs, bought new Mercedes, used their house like an ATM.
How do you know that, Jeremy? Where'd you get that statistic? How do you know that?
To be honest, it's been a while. And
you don't know that.
That I don't
so what I hear you saying is that you're an anarchist, you're a property owner, and you don't believe in property. Okay.
The Jackson case, I followed closely on you know, Oregon Online.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for calling, Jeremy. So this is a first caller putting it on the table.
Yeah.
It's something they did. It's their fault.
Exactly. I mean, I think that this is a response that we get a lot from the community, from the media, especially the mainstream media. The reality for me is that, and I think for the folks that we work with and the people in the housing justice movement, is that individual actions didn't create this housing crisis, and that no matter what happened with one individual, we are in a systemic crisis that's beyond whatever you did with your home. So that's one piece of it. The other piece of it is that we can't understand people's personal realities around this stuff. Health issues, major medical needs, serious expenses, you know, the need to fix the roof on your home, these things require people to get access to money to take out mortgages on their home. And that's what they do. And then they get underwater and the bank takes advantage and people become distraught and, you know, go into foreclosure. And these major expenses are a result of our society not taking care of each other, right? We force people to go into foreclosure on their home because they have medical bills. You know, Annette Steele needed a new roof on her home and did a reverse mortgage so that she could afford to fix up her family home. And And that caused her to go into, you know, down the road to go into foreclosure.
Hers is another perfect example of the debt sellers. See, this is the thing, Jeremy. This is the part that gets me. And I respect that you're an anarchist and that you don't believe in private property, even though you said that you do own private property. That's fine with me. The thing that gets me is the manipulation of what are rules that were already stacked against consumers. Mm-hmm. The fact that in these cases, whatever happened with someone's debt, whatever happened, like they took out the loan or they had to take a second mortgage, whatever that is, what gets me is where the banks or the debt sellers, they won't negotiate. Mm-hmm. They won't return your calls. We have multiple nonprofits now set up in the state of Oregon just to try to compel banking institutions to talk to their customers. And it's like when you're, it's like the things that have already happened with the lending industry in this United States being deregulated, it's a scandal. And when you look at how the entire Occupy movement came about, it was like the only thing that could draw attention to the abuses of Wall Street. I'm just putting that out. The abuses of Wall Street. Fannie Mae, that, you know, that institution, semi-privatized, semi-public, those people, for decades, people have looked at Fannie Mae and wondered if they could cause the entire economy to tank. What happened? The entire economy tanked. Just putting that out, Jeremy. I don't mean to pound on you. I'm glad that somebody came out and asked the hard question. But, you know, again, there's actually a law in Oregon that encourages the banking institutions to negotiate or mediate with their customers, but there's no teeth to it. So no one does it. So it's like, to me, that's the rubber on the road. Whatever agreement, whatever you sign with the bank, fine. But if you're having an issue, you should be able to renegotiate your loan. And the way that, just look, Jeremy, at the transfer of cash. And so you talk about Alicia Jackson, somebody using, quote, using their home as an ATM, unquote. You're talking about African American people who are already left out of the banking industry, the Austin family, multiracial family,
yes,
African American family. So that's the part that gets me. Hey, people, listeners, are you in debt? Right now, are you facing a catastrophic debt? I'd love to hear from you. We have some more callers. Let's go back to the phone lines. We have Leslie. Gosh, Leslie, sorry, I just like pounded on Jeremy there. He's just a guy. What are you thinking about, Leslie?
Hi, good morning. What I just wanted to say is the sheriff is an elected office, and someone progressive needs to run for it, because then these foreclosures will stop. If we have a sheriff in the office who refuses to pursue the foreclosures, they'll end. So someone needs to run for it.
That's a fabulous, fabulous idea. Thank you. Thank you for putting that out. You know, listeners, do you think we can elect people that will actually make our community a better place? Sometimes I wake up in the morning and I'm not sure if it's true. But I totally honor Leslie's vision of having a progressive person run for Multnomah County Sheriff. Did anybody want to respond to that? Carrie's like, she's like, oh my God, you know.
Well, I'll just quickly say what we're thinking about with the sheriff, because she's totally right. The sheriff initiated this eviction at the behest of the banks, at the behest of Fannie Mae, at the behest of the developers. Clearly, they are working for the industry, right? They're not working for the needs of our community. We're actually asking people to call Sheriff Staton, who's the Multnomah County Sheriff, and register their complaint about this, right? Let him know that we are watching and we are supporting the Austins. We support all folks facing eviction, and we want there to be no more evictions. We want them to call a moratorium on evictions in our community, because clearly the banks are operating illegally. Clearly they're kicking families out of their homes, and that's not what we want. So we need to put a halt on the whole thing until we can, sort things out. If folks want to call the sheriff, they can call him at 503-988-4300. We're encouraging you to do that. We're also going to be going to the sheriff's office on Thursday at 3:30 p.m. to just deliver the message that we as a community support the Austins, we stand with the Austins, and we say no more evictions. So folks can come down to that. It's at Grand and Hawthorne, at the corner of Grand and Hawthorne. We're just going to have a little rally outside of there and make our voices heard. So folks are invited to come and attend that. But I'm sure other folks have stuff to say about the
Southeast
the concept
Hawthorne
of
and Grand. That's the great big Multnomah County building.
It is. That's right.
That big brick one.
Yeah, the big red brick one.
I would definitely encourage people to call. I mean, the one thing that I have really realized through my involvement in this action and also through police accountability is they listen. And they are scared of the community rising up and saying no more, because they know that we have that ability. So I've seen the power of just 30 people working on something, working on a house. Imagine the power of everyone listening here, calling in. I promise you, it would make a difference.
All right.
So if you think that it's too much to go outside and kind of keep watch on a home in the 30-degree weather, the least you could do is please pick up your phone, email them, let them know your opinion that, you know, people need to live in homes. Banks don't live in homes. People do. And that's what's important, especially during this weather right now. I mean, Debbie and her family were made homeless, and look at the weather outside. I mean, thankfully they have, you know, people that can help them, you know, neighbors, because they've been there for so long. But what about the people who don't have strong ties to the community?
We don't even hear all the stories of all the people that have been foreclosed.
Right.
And listeners, there's no doubt in my mind that there are people in law enforcement that have had their homes foreclosed. There's no doubt in my mind. We don't hear those stories, right? There's no question in my mind that there's people that work for Multnomah County that are in despicable debt, possibly from some kind of health related issue. And just like with the military, I come from a military family. Inside that circle, the conversation's way different than outside the circle. And you know that those deputies are talking to each other about that. You know. I know. What do you know about human nature? There's definitely deputies that do not want to do that. And they're told they have to. It's your job. Adi-da-di-da-di. But I think it's probably a good idea to call up Sheriff Dan Statton and tell him what you think. And we do have two callers. Let's go back to the phone line. We have Heidi. Heidi, what's going on with you today?
Hey, Lisa. Thanks for the great conversation. Just real quick, I wanted to share my personal story. It's not going to be very long, about school loan debt.
Oh, my God. Think, the school loan thing's worse because you can't do anything about it. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, so I was one of the people that actually helped move Alicia back into her home a year ago, May Day.
That's Alicia Jackson.
And
that's who Jeremy was talking about.
To answer Jeremy's question, first of all, there was a bunch of the anarchist community there fully supportive of her, and they understand the corruption in the system. And I believe you've had a Jammu on that has had spearheading that, and he's talked about the specific corruption within the system, and so we put it back on the people. But people need to go out and meet these amazing people that are doing this work. Alicia's an amazing lady. I mean, just got a big heart. She's very, very sweet. And you need to go, before you judge too harshly people, you need to go out and get involved in that movement and see what's actually going on.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, what I wanted to bring up, so here's the other thing. When you do know you're going to get behind, and I've heard this from several, I'm not a homeowner, but this is my situation with my school loans. What the people told me at a couple of events was that they called ahead of time knowing they were going to be late. And the bank then told them, you have to wait till you're behind. I was like, what?
We've heard this many times.
I know. Then I knew I was going to get behind on my school loans, and I knew it was looming in the distance. So I called 2-3 months ahead of time. They kept saying, you need to wait till you're behind. I was like, are you kidding me? I'm trying to be responsible and get on top of this. They said, no, now they're sending me nasty letters. I may be qualified for a deferment, I don't know. But that's a corruption within the system.
Mm-hmm.
When you're trying to do the responsible thing,
and they're saying wait until you're they're saying wait until you're in that creek. Yeah.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. And again, this judging so harshly of people who these people I hear calling on the shows. I'm very involved in the community within Portland, and I hear a lot of people calling in who've never actually gone on the ground, gone to an event, and actually talked face-to-face with some of these people that are dealing with the issues. And so, it again takes the pressure off of this corrupt system and puts it back, and we're judging people like Alicia. And I don't think that guy really has his information straight. And again, I've seen the anarchist community come out in full force and be very compassionate and helpful to a lot of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And those were just a couple of points I wanted to put out there.
Thanks,
so,
Heidi.
Thank you for this great show.
Thanks for calling, Heidi. And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. It's 8:24. You're listening to KBOO Portland. We are live in the studio with community organizer Carrie Coe. We're with Glenn and Monica, neighbors of the Austin family who have been evicted from their home. There's an array of actions behind supporting the Austin family. We are Oregon.org. If you're near a computer, go check them out immediately. You can sign the petition to tell Fannie Mae to leave the Austin family alone. Fannie Mae. Okay, I want to tell a story. My name is Lisa Loving. I'm a reporter. 10 years ago, my publisher at the newspaper that I worked at, he wanted me to do a series about Fannie Mae, because Fannie Mae, which was largely considered to be that sort of like liberal financing juggernaut for the middle class, it was set up as sort of a liberal solution to banking failures. Banking failures. The banks, have they really always worked for everyone? Anyway, so we did this series about Fannie Mae, right? And this is the thing. During the entire decade of the 1990s, remember the dream of the 90s? During that entire decade, guess what the growth rate for black ownership was in North and Northeast Portland? And Fannie Mae made millions of dollars in loans, but the black homeowners' homeownership growth rate was what? Zero. It was zero. So we did an entire series about that. We got this guy from Housing and Urban Development, HUD, the state HUD office. He leaked us documents and statistics. This money, this Fannie Mae money, very specifically, did not go to people of color. Okay? Fannie Mae has been beat up for years. People have predicted that this was going to happen for years. The whole economic downturn, people had predicted it for years. And here are the banking industry people saying, oh, we didn't know. The Fed, the Federal Reserve, we had no idea this would happen. Okay, but this is what I'm getting at. I had to interview Fannie Mae, right? I called all over the country. This is the thing. They pile on reporters that cover what they do. And at that time, the only other media institution that had really written about this was the Wall Street Journal. I'm like, what? I called up the Wall Street Journal reporter. The guy was awesome. He detailed all of the mean, nasty things that Fannie Mae officials and spokespeople had done to him, right? And his partner, because it was a two-person team. So I finally got interviews with Fannie Mae, and this is what they did. They lined four people up on the phone with me, conference call. They tried to just pound my newspaper into the dirt. They really did. But it's all these little newspapers, it's all these little people speaking out that drew some kind of attention to the abuses of Fannie Mae. I'm telling you, this is interestingly also a place where some conservatives and some liberals and some farther left people have traditionally come together, but we don't recognize it. I'm throwing that one out just randomly. That one's kind of a gift to Jeremy, who is an anarchist and who's upset about Alicia Jackson. We do have a bunch of callers, but I do want to say, with Jeremy and with the other people, I think that people that do own property are afraid it's going to happen to us. So we want to believe that Alicia Jackson used her home as an automatic teller machine. Maybe she refinanced the mortgage or something. We want to tell ourselves that these other people did something wrong, because we don't want to believe that we can win the Flying Fickle Finger of Fate Award. That's what this is, really. You know, when it comes down to the foreclosure, it's not that it's random exactly, but it's like a perfect storm of all the things that can go wrong. And so you have all these other people that are not in foreclosure, people that could be active on this issue, but they don't want to move off the fence because they're afraid that if it could happen to them, but they don't want to admit it. I'm just putting that out.
Absolutely. My mom is in a situation to where about 4 years ago, we needed to do a new roof on the house, the garage,
improvement thing. Wow.
And she realized about a year ago that when she turns 72, she's looking at her balloon payment.
Right.
And how is somebody on Social Security going to be making a balloon payment?
You were supposed to be able to renegotiate those. The contract said, but then they don't necessarily.
If you go ahead and you do right for these 3 years, we'll obviously be able to remodify this again and get it to where you won't have a balloon payment because you did such a good job, and they're not returning phone calls.
The specific reasons that Wells Fargo, Countrywide, Mortgage and Loan, all these other people they're paying gigantic settlements with the federal government, $1 billion settlements, but that doesn't even touch the real amount of wealth everyday people have lost. Why are there so many poor people in this country? Could it be because of the banking sector?
Well, also, you have to realize that the settlements that they're getting through the litigation in the state and federal government,
it gives the homeowner $5,000 or something.
I heard that most of that money is actually going toward the state government to compensate for the lower taxes that they're getting, property taxes that they're pulling in, because no one's in their homes. So the state tax base is getting reimbursed for that, but the homeowners are still, you know, up a creek and either homeless, living with friends or family, or renting a place that's too small for their family, or what have you.
I want to speak to this for a moment, is this idea of the legal system and it as an option for change, because I know that with the housing justice community in Portland and actually across the nation with who we're in touch with, the legal system has not been a solution for homeowners fighting this, right? The legal system is set up for the banks, for those with a big legal team, or as Monica mentioned, for the state to like get reimbursed for this. Homeowners themselves are not finding the legal system to be adequate, which I think is, like you're saying, with homeowners who currently own property sort of not wanting to believe that this could happen to you. I think a lot of folks also believe sort of in that idea that the legal system can help you and save you. And what we're finding is that that's simply not true, that it's set up for somebody else. And people who take that route exhaust that and then are left with
nothing,
with only their community and with direct action at their hands to be able to try and keep their homes. So we really, as a community, need to figure out what is our method for keeping people in their homes mm-hmm. when the banks are against us, the state isn't working for us, and the legal system is functioning for somebody else.
You know, it's really interesting, Carrie. I'm really old. I'm super old. Like, I'm so old, it stuns me sometimes. And back in the day, we had what was called Earth First, right? Mm-hmm. And the whole point was that these multinational corporations were clear-cutting all the old growth in Oregon. One of the only things that's really of value in this state is our environment, really, and us. Mm-hmm. People, the human capital, right? So the environmental movement back in the 80s and 90s, you had Earth First were the people that you locked themselves to the gates of the places where the people were going to go clear cut. You had the ONRC, Oregon Natural Resources Council, who had attorneys, right? They were the people, they were like, they didn't necessarily get along with, Earth Firsters, nobody got along with y'all, okay, that's fine. Nobody got along with them, but they did their own thing. They did their law enforcement, they did the lawsuit stuff. There were other groups that were like, no, we really believe in the political system, and they went and lobbied the state. We needed all those pieces, mm-hmm. even though those people didn't get along, and that's what we do not have at this time.
Yeah, we need to be fighting on multiple fronts because they're hitting us on multiple fronts.
I'd love to see the organization emerge that's willing to take on the Fannie Mae, Wells Fargo. It is still a brand, but anyway, people that are willing to take on these gigantic corporate institutions that field six attorneys. They're going to send mm-hmm. six attorneys to your case. You're going to be lucky if you can afford one person from legal aid. Right. I actually don't know that people are getting help from legal aid. I'd love to hear from someone from legal aid.
Yeah.
Anyway, give us a call if you're from legal aid. Anyway, we do have a full slate of callers. We have Leah on the phone. Leah, what do you think?
Well, what I understand and what I've learned is information is power. A couple things. First of all, nobody is excluded from this. They are going after every property they can. Second is the best situation, the best information is found through goodgriefamerica.com. Just Google Good Grief, their foreclosure. I learned about the foreclosure process and what the banks were doing from them. When you see the system, you will understand what's happening, and it will make you very angry.
Leah, and I think system is the term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, and it's a criminal system. Unfortunately, there are attorneys available. The best way is to go through some organization like Good Grief so that you know which attorneys will help you, because it's an educational process. Most attorneys have no idea how to deal with this. And the other thing is, we're all on our own here. We have to support each other because there is no organization. And because this situation is so big and so pervasive and so nasty, I mean, the city, the state, they're all going to be colluding. They're getting payoffs from these banks. So it is up to us, the citizens, to stand up for this and say no. And I will call Sheriff Staton.
Thank you, Leah.
Based on the stuff of these overtime and pay, and they want more money, excuse me?
Right.
No way I'm going to give this to you. I'm just outraged. They're public citizens.
Right. Leah, here's the thing, too. I want to put this out, and thanks for calling. We're going to go back to the phone lines, Leah. But see, okay, I don't mean to be rude, but Hillsborough, right? This Forest Grove police officer goes berserk in a domestic dispute, pulls out a gun, starts shooting, and 10 Hillsborough officers start shooting back, right? Was this yesterday or the day before?
I think it happened about 3 days ago.
There you go. So I really, honestly, genuinely, truly believe that there are major mental health issues involved in law enforcement. I genuinely believe that the people that we know that work for the sheriff's office, the people that we know that work for the police department, they're harmed psychologically by the work that they're forced to do. Just like in the military, it's not okay for them to talk about that, because in the military, if you talk about having a psych problem, boom, you're demonized, okay? But this is the one that gets me. I really, honestly, genuinely, truly believe that these law enforcement people are personally, psychologically damaged when they drag innocent people out of their homes because they know exactly what's going on with those banks because they all have mortgages too. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, I think that we don't have all the information on that. And if there is somebody wiki leaking out there for law enforcement, I would love to make your acquaintance, okay? And we do have some more callers. Let's go back to the phone line. We have Joanne. Joanne, what's going on?
Well, I want to say so many things that probably I shouldn't say on cable, but I'm going to try to squelch it. First, this pain in my shoulder. Okay. I don't know if I'm going to be able to talk now.
Come on. You can do it.
thank you. Communes and that in the U.S., all over the country. I just wonder what's up. The release. If they're taking in any people that are losing their housing and jobs, like Alan Graf had a program on cable. He went to Tennessee to one. And Alan, I'm human, I have to say this. You abandoned my grandson in a Social Security case. But anyway, don't waste the time responding. I just had to get that out.
All right, no problem.
Breathing.
You know, I would love to respond to the question of money, which I think is a huge one. You, the caller, I think Leah mentioned that the sheriff's office has been their budget has been in the news a lot recently. You know, they're $3.5 million over budget, and they're halfway through the fiscal year, and they are spending overtime, time, and resources to come in under the cover of darkness, invisibly, trying to hide from the media and the community at large at 5 a.m. to drag people out of their homes. We're paying for that. The other thing that we're paying for is Fannie Mae is a government institution. We are paying for Fannie Mae.
Semi-privatized.
Exactly. And they are paying right now for armed security guards to keep the Austin's home empty. We estimate that costs about, $480 a day, give or take, to keep an armed security person in that house to make sure that home stays empty. This is what we're paying for. So if you want to be, a fiscal conservative, you want to get down to nuts and bolts and talk about that, let's talk about how much we're paying to actually make this happen. And that doesn't include the cost of the police overtime to come and support the sheriff in kicking people out. These are real issues that our community is facing when we're getting ready to close 2 schools in North Portland because we can't afford to have them function, right? Or we're talking about closing the Jefferson, the Jefferson Community Schools. That is a serious issue that we're talking about. So not only is this foreclosure and healthcare tied into that because people are facing major medical bills, but then also the fact that our community doesn't have the resources that we need because we're funneling money into evicting families from their homes. This is, as a society, what they have chosen to prioritize, and we have to push back against that as hard as we can.
I also want to go back to what Joanne said about communes. Are there people that are taking in the people that are winding up homeless? And Joanne, I know of a couple places where people have community houses, right? And I know of scatterings of people that on their own, including at my house, people are taking in people into their house who have turned up homeless. So I'd love to hear from anyone who's doing that also. And I think that Joanne worries about losing her own housing in the public housing sphere. Almost everybody that I know that lives in a home forward facility worries that they could be thrown out on the street at any time. And so if you are somebody out there that's making a room available for free to someone because they're down on their luck, as we've done at my house, we'd love to hear from you as well. 503-231-8187. Circle A Radio did a program about 8 years ago that was about housing, and they profiled this group of 6 or 7 elderly women in Northeast Portland who literally, they each had like a room or a place to go, and they had a council where they figured out people they would give free housing to, which I just thought was juicy. It was a bunch of old ladies doing that, and that's incredible,
amazing.
And nobody asked them to do it, and they don't put an ad in the Will Slimet Week or anything like that. I just love that. So anyway, this is Wednesday Talk Radio. It is 8:39. We're live in the studio with community organizer Carrie Coe and Glenn and Monica, who are the neighbors of the Austin family. The Austin family, another family that's been dragged forcibly out of their home behind a perceived debt disagreement with Fannie Mae. And if you go on the web to We Are www.oregon.org. You can find a number of ways to dig into this movement, to just get behind the Austins. I mean, people are like, okay, the Austins, they're on the hot seat right now. Let's help them out. So you can sign the petition to tell Fannie Mae to leave people alone. You can find out the phone number to call up Sheriff Dan Staton and ask him what the heck, you know, he's doing, letting the sheriffs drag people out of their home. I think if people call up the sheriff's office, ask them if they have sheriffs or employees that are facing foreclosure. Do it. Ask them. You can't know. One of the things I learned from going to weareoregon.org is that there's a woman that I know who's a state official, and she's supporting her neighbor, who is a wonderful person that I also know, who's also facing foreclosure. We have state officials that are part of this movement, but who can really get traction against the banking industry? Unclear to me. I don't see the president doing it. Anyway, and Glenn had to say something. Just
another thing to ask the sheriff's office is, who's paying for this private security guards to stay put in the Austin's home? It was one of the truly disturbing things. I got the call at about...
You live there.
I got a call at about 6:30 in the morning saying that the sheriffs were at the Austin's house. Can I go over and try to show support to the family while they're standing on the sidewalk? And the really creepy thing was, when I got there, there was a person in a bulletproof vest, not a sheriff, a person in a bulletproof vest with a gun standing in the window watching us. It was downright creepy. Who's paying for that? Is the sheriff's office, who is completely broke, paying
for that? Yeah, we'd like to know the jurisdiction of that person, in fact. That is a good question.
Well, yeah.
We have a full slate of callers. Let's rush back to that phone line. We have Mark on the phone. Mark, what do you think?
Good morning, and thank you for being KBOO and hosting this kind of a program. A couple quick thoughts. One is, I know with respect to your first caller who thought it was, you know, an individual's fault, the bank had to change the law to be able to bundle those mortgages and sell them before they could do that legally. So they knew ahead of time they were going to rig the system. Mm-hmm. One thing we can do that you haven't really mentioned very much is, if you have a checking account or a savings account with a bank, take it out, move it to a credit union.
Okay. Thank you.
Amen.
But yeah, the credit unions aren't perfect either. If you get a home equity loan, usually the credit union will handle that loan themselves. But if you get a home mortgage, they will sell that mortgage to the marketplace.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So Ajamu Umi talked about that issue. Ajamu was on this show a few weeks ago, and he is a major organizer around Occupy Portland Black Working Group, helping keep people from getting kicked out of their houses. He used to be a credit union vice president, and he knows the whole thing. Incredibly articulate.
Ridiculously smart.
Unbelievable. And thank you, Mark. Mark is suggesting...
quick questions or quick comments. One is, if someone's house is going to be evicted, like the two people you mentioned, all we need to do is get a small fund together and buy that house and then sell it back to them at the lower rate.
Mark, you're so fingers on the pulse. And check this out. That's part of the reason why I think it's fraud. Glenn, talk about it. You're not allowed to do that. You can't. There have been people that have tried. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, there you go. There have been people who have attempted to do just that, and it's not possible. The houses are off the market, and they're holding them waiting for the housing market to go back up so they can turn a profit on it. These houses aren't for sale.
It's despicable. We've seen people because that's the thing. There are people with money. And in this case, there are people that are they have the money. They just don't have the terms that the bank wants. That's why the family on Alameda Ridge was trying to renegotiate. They have a job. The Austins, they have a job.
Right.
They're literally trying to renegotiate. And as Glenn said, sometimes it's the balloon payment that hits you right between the eyes. You know what I'm saying? Come up with $20,000 right here on this date.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And in the case of a lot of these folks, what we also see is that it's if the banks are foreclosing on the homes, then they sell them at auction, which is essentially a bunch of people standing around
on the courthouse steps.
Exactly, we've been there, and that's a despicable process. And developers are buying these homes at what Mark is suggesting is that you know, is happening. The developers, though, are buying it, and it's a very difficult process to get into. It's not as easy as you might imagine. And this is part of the huge problem, right? That it's not just the banks and the way that they've manipulated the system, but developers are targeting Portland, and our housing market is suffering the consequences of that. And we see people, as Glenn said, sitting on these homes, waiting for the property values to increase. And we also see the fact that people are, trying to buy houses, split the property, build condos, that gentrification is happening in our neighborhoods, that people who traditionally live in the neighborhoods are being pushed out by these developers, by more wealthy folks who are coming in and buying up these quote unquote cheap homes. So this is it's all part of a complex web, and I wish it could be a little bit more like strike debt or whatever, where we could just collect some money and buy up everything. But it's
hard. One last quick comment is that I know we always talk about the evictions, and it's a terrible problem, and it really bothers me. But we don't always talk about evictions of renters, and we talk about the middle class, but we don't talk about people who are in the lower class who are getting their butts kicked all the time too. And I thank you for your program.
Thanks for calling
this morning,
Mark. We did talk about that a couple weeks ago, but go ahead, Glenn, what you're saying.
This morning, the Martins family out on 174th out in Gresham, the sheriff is, I don't know if they're currently being evicted or if they're evicted already, but I know the sheriff stopped by and said that they were going to come and evict them this morning.
Martin family.
And they're renters. I don't
have a lot of the background on the Martins other than I know that they're a longtime renters of the property, and the actual owner of the property missed some payments, and so... the house is gone.
I think what Mark brings up is really crucial, that this is not just about home ownership and property ownership, that this is about the way that we treat people around housing, and that this should not be about what you can buy. This should be about the fact that people need homes, banks don't need homes. Whether you're a renter, whether you're somebody who wants to own property, we're in the same struggle and the same fight. And I think that he's right. Renters are often overlooked, or it's more of a struggle to figure out how to support them. And we need to be thinking about that more, because you're right, we need to be thinking about how this affects working class people.
The whole thing definitely percolates from the top to the bottom. And we have a full slate of callers. I can see that the Magical Engineering Pixie's on like four phone lines personally. So let's try to go back to the phone lines. Vernon, is that right?
That's right, Lisa.
What's going on, Vernon?
This morning?
I'm all right. I'm kind of crabby. Whatever.
Hey, I want to give you a choice. We as elders, you and I, could kick up the Wayback Machine and talk a little bit about how we got into the mess we're in, and I could remind you of a couple incidents.
It's been a long time coming.
You will remember. Or, and you can, help, Mr. Lizard, help. We can kick up the Wayback Machine. Or I could talk about some friends that I'm sending you a message on Facebook about, who have found a solution, and they're from a community that is fighting successfully.
Tell us about the solution. Tell us about the solution. What are your friends doing?
Okay. Wakesa and Afia Madzimos, sorry, their last name's a handle, Madzimoyo. They are a couple from Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, just outside Atlanta. And Cynthia McKinney introduced me to them. They have won in court a restraining order against the bank because the bank has committed fraud. They've actually went in as their own attorneys, won a restraining order, and the bank is not allowed to collect their mortgage.
Beautiful.
That's the rare case. That's a rare case.
Teaching other people how to do this.
Where can we find out more, Vernon? Where can we...
I'm going to send you their phone number and contact information. Okay. I think you should interview Wakesa.
I'm going to try to do it. I'm going to try to do it. And I want to thank you for calling. We're starting to run out of show, and we've got a full slate of callers. I have to also say thanks, Vernon. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Political Perspectives, host Joe Meyer interviews Raj Patel. Dude's going to have freaking Raj Patel on the air. That's wild. Award-winning writer, activist, and academic. His latest book is The Value of Nothing. Have you been checking out that book? It's incredible. New York Times bestseller. At 10, Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, Nora Barrows Friedman reports on occupied Palestine for the electronic intifada. And we hear from pro-choice activists who faced off with anti-abortion activists yesterday on the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. I saw the folks on Monday at Pioneer Square. Very small crowd. At 11 on the Recovery Zone, host Stephanie Potter interviews Rob Dietz, author of Enough is Enough, Building a Sustainable Economy in a World of Finite Resources. And at 11:30, Ryan speaks with David Delk of Movement to Amend, Paul Cienfuegos of Community Rights PDX, that's wild, and Andrea Tosi of Repeace about the third anniversary of the Citizens United ruling, which gave corporations and unions the green light to spend unlimited sums on ads and other political tools. 11:30, Paul Cienfuegos, you should probably be listening to KBOO. Anyway, this is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in the studio with community organizer Carrie Coe, Glenn and Monica, who are the neighbors of the Austin family, a week ago dragged out of their homes and made homeless by Fannie Mae. Thanks, Fannie Mae. And we have a full slate of callers. Let's go back to the phone line. We've got Joe on the phone. Joe, what do you think? What's going on?
Well, your caller before last, out of what I've had on my mind listening to your show this morning when he brought up kind of the class question, and I just wanted to bring up how the idea of ownership society has been so pivotal, I think, in laying out the foreclosure crisis, the housing crisis, and that I think that questioning that ethos, which has been ingrained in American consumer habits since after the war, when American workers were so excited about what they could do together, that the, you know, ruling class, the bourgeoisie, the government made housing such an attractive option for workers that they basically tied these big property weights around their necks, which ultimately made it easier to break the backs of unions in the 60s, 70s, 90s, and, you know, as it's been going for the last several decades.
All right.
I just wanted to bring that perspective into it because I think questioning ownership, big property ownership, is necessary for actually addressing housing justice.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Joe. And we have another couple callers. Let's go back to the phone line. We have Michael. Michael, is that you?
Yes. Hello.
Michael, what's going on?
Hi. Good show. I don't know if this would help anyone in the situation that they're in with foreclosure, but On Point Credit Union is offering a deal where you can transfer your mortgage over. They're waiving everything. They're waiving all of the closing costs and then all of those costs. All you're doing is transferring your money directly from a bank like, for instance, Chase, which is what I did. I was at WaMu when Chase took over, and I got stuck there. I wasn't able to transfer out without paying a whole bunch of money. I had all my business account, my personal account, checking, everything bundled. So if I did, then I would have had to start paying service charges for nothing. So when OnPoint came up with this deal, I just transferred all of it over there, and I did it. It really is real. They don't charge you anything, and I've had like a point lower interest rate, so it saved me a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Plus, I'm not having to pay any service charges to Chase, and I'm out of there. I'm not with them anymore. I feel better being with OnPoint now.
Thanks for calling, Michael.
Thank you.
Michael, Michael's bringing up this interesting point, and again, Ajamu Umi talked about this a bit a couple weeks ago. People are being strongly encouraged to transfer whatever accounts you may have to a credit union, in part because so often the credit union is like locally controlled. OnPoint, I believe it used to be the teacher's credit union. I think it's still locally controlled. And one of the points that Ajamu brought up is that and at the end of the day, that local control cannot work for mortgages because actually OnPoint, they're not big enough to handle massive mortgage things like that. And so I can't remember what he said about it. They sell that mortgage to someone else. He basically said that specifically that kind of debt does not stay local because the system doesn't provide for that. But I don't want to trash Michael's point about OnPoint. And maybe we will be able to bring that up and really dig into that more later because this issue of debt it impacts even people that don't have debt. Carrie, you're just like, do you want to say something?
No, I mean what I think about this is that what Ajamu was getting at, it was correct. Is that we can try to make the best consumer decisions that we can make. And I think obviously you should go with a credit union if you can or a community bank. Credit unions are supposed to be democratically controlled at the local level. You can run for the board. All of that I think is true. But ultimately what we are trying to address as an organizing body and as a community is the fact that the system is flawed and it's working against us.
The system.
Exactly. So wherever we put our money, I think that we should make those efforts and we shouldn't undermine those efforts. Why put your money with Wells Fargo if you don't have to, or Chase. But ultimately, we have to remember that this is not about individual decisions changing the ultimate reality, that we have to be collectively organizing around this and collectively putting energy into it in order to readjust a system that's set up, as you're saying, that's like too big, that it's collapsing into other spaces, right? That credit unions mm-hmm. can't handle the mortgage or what have you, that the laws are set up around that. So I just want to reinforce that we should be making good decisions, but ultimately we have to be organizing ourselves to make that change, or else we'll just be reinventing the wheel in a different department.
And I want to thank Michael for calling, though. I like to hear people's personal Absolutely. Experiences with these institutions. And I also feel kind of bad about slamming on Jeremy, even though he asked the first question out of the door that we wanted someone to ask. You know, isn't it somebody's fault? Isn't it something that they did? Shouldn't they be punished for making their bad decisions? And we're basically saying, actually, there's a lot of evidence to show that the entire system doesn't really work for most people. I think that's the point, no matter what you do. And we do have another couple callers. Let's go back to the phone line. We have Jennifer. Jennifer, what's going on with you?
Hi, good morning. Just to go back to a little bit about the ownership society and how that's really been ingrained in our capitalistic system. Really, the concept of mortgages and home ownership really emerged in the early 20th century during the rise of the labor movement. There were a lot of the talk of socialism. Communist organizations in our country, and our government really, as a response to that, and to really this going into this paranoid fear of losing our capitalism, was that if people owned property, they would be less likely to
rebel.
Rebel and buy into or be convinced that perhaps socialism or Marxism was a better system. Mm-hmm. And so really it emerged, that paranoia of losing our capitalistic system, and that's really where this all started.
All right, Jennifer. Thanks a lot for calling. We're starting to run out of show. I talked a little bit earlier about when I did this big thing about Fannie Mae years ago. One of the interesting things when I called up the Wall Street Journal reporter was that he said there's a sense that institutions like Fannie Mae and the banking industry pumped up the idea of home ownership as a do-all, be-all. You're no one if you don't own property. But the thing is, it's not really cut out for everybody, and there's a lot of hidden costs for home ownership. So that it was like they artificially inflated the number of people that would have normally been able to use to afford a home, setting people up to fail, which was even more profitable than getting people into the homes. And so that's kind of what we're looking at the corruption of the system. I think we have one more caller. We have Kirk on the phone. Let's try to get Kirk in. Kirk, what are you thinking about?
I used to work for a servicing software company, and I remember that year or two before the crash, sitting around a conference table taking on a list of features to add to the software, like reverse mortgages, like these weird mortgage plans that had nothing to do with realistic payment methods as far as actually getting a person to actually own their house eventually. And, the commands came down from on high, not from our company, but it came from the banks, mm-hmm. As far as the commands to start producing these loan types, which fed into the greed of people of, getting an easy money, getting into these properties. And the last comment is that when a failed loan is being processed by a servicing company, they sell it for like pennies on the dollar to another entity to basically recapture lost value. So that's why you have these people that are being hounded, mm-hmm. And they're trapped. I mean, once you get into that particular part of the system, you are messed up. You can't get out.
Kirk, you are the smoking gun, man. I wish you'd called earlier. I hope you call earlier next time, because I'd love to hear from you again. We have 1 minute left in this show. Kirk, thank you so much for calling. That's wild what he had to say. Okay, we have to leave it there. We are Oregon Petition.org. You're going to find out where to sign up for the petition to force Fannie Mae to leave the Austins alone. You're going to be able to sign up for the Rapid Response Network. Now, tomorrow afternoon at 3:30, people are meeting at the Multnomah County Office Building in Southeast Portland, going to be protesting against the Sheriff's Department. Call the Sheriff, 503-988-4300. That's it for our show. Thanks to our guests, Carrie Coe, Glenn.
Free Cascadia.
And Monica.
And Glenn and Monica. Find out more about them again at weareoregon.org. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Sky the Studio Dog. This show will be podcast on kboo.fm by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discuss on this show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for Raj Patel. Wow.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis and Albany. The time is 9:01. Coming up next on KBOO, on Political Perspectives, host Joe Meyer interviews Raj Patel, award-winning writer, activist, and academic. His latest book, The Value of Nothing, is a New York Times bestseller. At 10 o'clock here, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, Nora Barrows-Friedman reports on occupied Palestine for the Electronic Intifada. And we'll hear from pro-choice activists who faced off with anti-abortion activists yesterday on the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. At 11 o'clock on The Recovery Zone, host Stephanie Potter interviews Rob Dietz, co-author of Enough is Enough, Building a Sustainable Economy in a World of Finite Resources. And at 11:30, Robin Ryan speaks with David Delk of Move to Amend, Paul Cienfuegos of Community Rights PDX, and Andrea Tose of Repeace, about the third anniversary of the Citizens United ruling, which gave corporations and unions the right to the green light to spend unlimited sums on ads and other political tools.
January 18, 2013. KBOO Navigator Report. Overwhelming support and a record number of donations were received at the close of 2012. Thank you, KBOO donors. 6 months of hard work have resulted in a more knowledgeable board and updated board policies, completing a grant from the Meyer Memorial Trust. A new partnership with mainstreamed media will give reporters with developmental disabilities a voice on the KBOO Evening News. The KBOO Council of Elders will be gathering in March. For more information, contact Lynn Fitch